Okay. Next question deals with Route 116 through Easton. Is your justification for using Route 116 through Easton RSA section 231 subsection 160? If so, that section only applies to power lines installed in a city, a town, or a village district. I guess they're asking if that's the justification for using underground, for using Route 116 through Easton.
What was the statute site?
Just to 231, make sure. 160.
That is correct. That's the statutory site that is being relied on for our application.
Do you understand that to apply only to power lines installed in a city, a town, or a village district?
I don't have the statute right in front of me, but I would take the statute to apply on its face.
Is the Northern Pass transmission line a public utility? Section Roman numeral 8, I think it's 202, says private utilities are not permitted in state right-of-ways. So I guess the first question is Northern Pass transmission line a public utility?
Part of the process of the siting process associated with that, we will be applying to become a public utility.
And that's for purposes of operating this facility.
Okay, section Roman numeral 10A7 says manholes are only allowed in an urban setting. How will they be allowed on Route 116?
So as part of the design of the line, we are considering using splice pits and splice vaults. There are two different types of things. Splice pits do not have manholes and will not have access from the street level. Those, for the most part, will be used in the areas that person is discussing.
Next question. Last week, the Canadian company trying to build the XL pipeline announced that they would sue the United States for $15 billion, which includes potential profits, which are terms included in the North American Free Trade Agreement. Are we similarly liable should the Northern Pass project be rejected?
I'm not in a position to answer that for Hydro-Quebec.
Next deals with a... How is Hydro-Quebec electricity generated and distributed?
So the power flowing over Northern Pass will come from their hydroelectric fleet. Hydro-Quebec is a large generator. They generate approximately 40,000 megawatts, which is actually more generating capacity than all of New England put together. The vast majority of that is large-scale hydropower. The power flowing over this line will be certified to have come from that source. They do operate a handful of other plants, but the power flowing over Northern Pass will be fully certified to have come from their hydro fleet. Their distribution, in essence their transmission to Northern Pass, will be through a line that they are in the process of siting on the Canadian side of the border. The hydro fleet is in northern Quebec, and they, similar to Northern Pass, will be building an interconnecting line to get it to the U.S.-Canadian border. That will be a all-overhead construction, and it'll intersect with Northern Pass.
So Mr. Quinlan's described the interconnection between Hydro-Quebec and the United States. The typical customer in Hydro-Quebec receives their power delivery the same way we do here in New Hampshire. There's generators, there's transmission lines, and there's distribution lines that follow the public way, and they receive electric service the same type and quality that we do here.
Next question is, why are you advertising clean hydropower on TV and radio in New Hampshire and Massachusetts if you have not yet gotten a certificate to build the project?
Yeah, so that is one of the key objectives of this project. When you look at New Hampshire, New England, and in the United States clean energy goals. And this is reflected now in the recently released clean power plan that came out from the Environmental Protection Agency. Importing large-scale hydropower from Canada is a key to achieving those clean energy goals. We think this is the project that is best suited to do that for New Hampshire and New England, and that's why we are proposing the project and advertising about it.
Okay. This question appears to deal with things like terrorism. It's a rather long question. Mr. Quinlan, once the 250-foot right-of-way in Concord becomes crowded with Hydro-Quebec 345 kV lines sandwiched between two existing 115 kV lines, which will undoubtedly be compliant with all line separation safety specifications, what happens when a team of highly motivated radical Islamist terrorists apply a few ribbon-cutting charges to turn your monopole grove into an abatis, A-B-A-T-I-S?
So, you know, physical security is always a challenge in our business. It's a distributed system. The transmission grid across the entire United States is largely overhead. You know, you have many substations in New England that exist today that have equal or greater potential impacts on the grid. It's an issue that the industry is kind of keenly focused on, and you know, how do we, in a cost-effective way, protect a distributed grid that essentially goes for thousands and thousands of miles? It's a big challenge. It's an industry concern. It's getting a lot of attention. Jim?
Yeah, I'll just add to that. So once we've finished our evaluation with ISO New England, they will have evaluated that right-of-way and every right-of-way that Northern Pass is involved with, such that they would be able to tell us that we can proceed with the project because they know the loss of that right-of-way will not impact the reliable operation of the grid. The grid will be able to, you know, with certain lines tripping off, the grid will be able to sustain itself and not collapse and cause a widespread blackout. That's a, you know, kind of a standard criteria that they're always looking at and evaluating as they evaluate any project that applies to connect to the grid, be it a generator or a transmission upgrade or a new renewable, you know, power station.
Funny you should mention that, because the next part of this question asks, please compare and contrast the August blackout of 2003, which took 3 hours to avalanche 345 kV services into an international blackout, with the above scenario, which means the terrorist scenario, which will create through faults among three transmission line services within 10 to 15 seconds. Please comment on the outcome of such an event. And the questioner asks that you include your best guess on the duration and spread of such an outage, the resulting domestic and global economic impact, and how many deaths would result in 1 week or 1 month.
Turn this over to Mr. Bowes.
I'll try to answer at least the first part of that. I probably won't defer on the last part. I was the, now the terminology is used as incident commander, but I was in charge of the restoration for the portion of New England that was impacted by the blackout in 2004. The compare and contrast, at that point in time, it happened to spread across to, you know, central United States through New York and into New England. And it was actually isolated through a portion of Connecticut. So a portion of Western Mass and a portion of Connecticut were impacted by that blackout. Some of the actions that the operators in New England took were actually credited with preventing the widespread blackout throughout the rest of New England. So there were some very positive things that happened that day. Having another interconnection of approximately 1,000 megawatts to a different area would strengthen the system we have today in comparison to what we had in 2004. Unfortunately, we're also losing many of the stable sources of generation in New England. Mr. Quinlan detailed many of those base load power plants, where although some are not as clean as others, they did offer diversity of supply and diversity of location. So that is probably less so going forward and would be further exacerbated if we did not have another interconnection with Hydro-Quebec. Maybe you can get to the last part.
Well, I'm going to say the questioner asked that given the scenarios that he's posited here, can you comment on the duration and spread of the outage? How long would it last and how far would it reach?
So it's probably difficult to predict. I can tell you about history and if that's an indicator of the future. On August of 2004, we restored about 80 substations, about half of Connecticut and half of Western Mass, in about 8 hours in duration. There were still three or four interconnections that were not made. In fact, one of them was a permitted DC transmission line between Connecticut and Long Island. It was actually energized that morning, and it's the same technology that we're proposing for Northern Pass, and it was used to restart the system on Long Island. So a very positive impact.
Given the same scenarios, what would the resulting domestic and global economic impact be?
So a large-scale power interruption has widespread economic impacts, clearly beyond just the hours of outage. The lost productivity across commercial and industry is very significant. There are a variety of studies out there and models that describe how that is done. But it clearly could be hundreds of millions of dollars per day of outage.
And then the third question was, what would the resulting deaths in a week or a month be?
So yeah, that's, I would say, very difficult to predict. Most, I'll say, critical care facilities do have backup supplies of power and are required, for example, hospitals required to have backup generation that kicks on and provides at least a limited life support systems. Beyond that, I would say it's very difficult to predict.
I'm going to test you further. Hold on to the mic. Revise the above estimates and tell us what would happen if this event occurred on the coldest evening in February.
So again, that probably have a wider spread impact as life safety would be impacted within a few hours for customers that rely on electricity for either direct heat and comfort or indirect through the circulating pumps and fans they have on fossil fuel fired heating systems. So it would be much more dramatic.
If we assume that these events are inevitable, what are prudent countermeasures?
So I think making the grid more resilient, a more diverse supply of power, hardening the infrastructure that we have, both the distribution and transmission systems, providing automation in those systems that will provide a redundant supply, and obviously there are physical and cybersecurity issues that go beyond the physical infrastructure aspects that also have to be considered.
Okay. Mr. Cookman?
Yes.
You have a statement written on the back here. You didn't expect it to be asked as a question, did you?
No, that would have been
okay.
My comment.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, visual impacts and tower heights. As far as mitigating visual impact, you have the techniques. Is there a guarantee you will use them? Is it written for each tower along the route which techniques will be used?
It is our intention to use the techniques that I outlined earlier. And it's going to be on a case-by-case basis. We have already begun to apply some of them, but we're going to continue to refine our design and engineering as we move towards construction.
Do you have something written for each tower as to what techniques will be used with respect to each tower?
In instances where we've made a determination to use a monopole structure as opposed to the conventional lattice, I believe that's now documented in our SEC application. But there are other techniques that I outlined with material type, color, structure location, in some cases structure height. You know, we're going to continue to refine that estimate as we move forward. So we are beginning to document it. It's in our application, but we're going to continue to apply those techniques. And you know, that's obviously an area where we welcome local input.
Next part of this question. Most of the towers are 80 feet tall. What is the highest, and how much higher is that than the existing right-of-way towers now in place?
So the highest structure on the project is on the AC portion of the lines, and it is 155 feet tall. In that region, the existing 115 lines that are there are approximately, the highest ones are approximately 100 feet tall.
Can you tell everybody where that is on the AC line?
That's in the Deerfield area.
Okay. Question toward generation and distribution at Hydro-Québec. At my job in the switching station, we use fuel, demineralized water, and air to generate electricity. How will Hydro-Québec generate its power?
So the power flowing over this line will be generated by their existing hydro fleet, which essentially is a large dam and a turbine system to generate electricity.
Okay, I think we've exhausted all the questions that we've received. We're going to move to the next portion of our meeting, which is statements, but I'm going to give everybody a 5-minute break to stretch. 9 o'clock, we'll start with statements.